Random Jottings of Hinge and Bracket with Dr. Evadne Hinge and Dame Hilda Bracket. With Jean Haywood as Maud and friends and neighbors at Stacton Trestle in Fit for Anything.
Life at the old manse can be very tranquil and relaxing. It would be even more tranquil and relaxing if Evadne didn't live there. But she does. The trouble is, she has a sort of Victorian work ethic, which is somewhat surprising, since her formative years must have fallen well before Victoria's time. But she's one of those who hates to see anybody taking it easy. The moment one sits down, puts one's feet up, reaches for a romantic novel and a glass of medium sherry, she's off. "Come on, stay at front," she says in that cockatoo-like voice of hers. "We live in a world of activity. And before I know what I'm doing something I didn't want to do, like holding the creosote while she creosotes the fence." Well, one morning a week or two back, I was sitting with my feet up, sipping a glass of medium sherry, when she started her old game of trying to make me feel uncomfortable. "Oh, do stop pacing about, Evadne. You're creating a draft. Why don't you sit down and relax?"
"I don't want to sit down and relax."
"Then why don't you go out and do something in the garden?"
"I was doing something in the garden, but it started to rain."
"Well, you've got your Macintosh and your lifeboatman's hat, haven't you?"
"Hilda, it's absolutely bucketing now."
"Then go into the kitchen and pickle an onion or something."
"I can't go in the kitchen. Maud's in there."
"Not still. What on earth's she doing?"
"Well, you know that apple pie she made? Well, she's sweeping it up off the floor."
"There you are, then. You can go in the kitchen and make us another apple pie, can't you?"
"With her?"
"No, dear, with apples." "This doesn't matter."
"Hilda, are you sure you should be drinking sherries at this hour of the morning?"
"A sherry, dear. I am sipping a sherry. Do you know, I can remember my maternal grandfather, Grandpa Fifield, as we used to call him. And I can remember him being brought a glass of port and a plate of ginger biscuits on a silver salver every morning, sharp at 11 o'clock.
"So what?"
"It's what they used to call civilization there. That's all. Gracious living. You must have heard of it."
"Yes. Yes, I have. It's what my maternal grandfather used to call decadence. Idle hands are the devil's playthings. That's what he always used to say."
"He does sound an original thinker. Anyway, I bet he took a drink or two in the mornings. After all, he did own a brewery."
"He may on occasion have tasted the ale in the course of his duties, Hilda, but certainly not just for pleasure."
"Oh, the ale was rotten, was it?"
"You know what I mean. It was work first, pleasure later with Grandfather."
"Oh, your grandfather must have been a barrel of fun." "Now I know who you take after."
"He was a fine-looking man. Mother always says I have his eyes."
"You look as though you've got his spectacles as well."
"Just look at that rain, Hilda. No sign of it letting up. I tell you what, how about you and me clearing out the garage?"
"What on earth for?"
"Because it's full of junk."
"So's your bedroom. If you want something to do, you should go and clear that out. You haven't washed your stuffed owl in months. And that mushroom bag under your bed needs changing."
"All right, let's go and do that then."
"No, not me, Evadne. You. I am comfortable. I am perfectly happy, and I am not moving."
"No wonder you're putting on weight."
"Putting on weight?
I think you are, you know, dear."
"I am doing no such thing, Evadne. In fact, if you must know, I weigh exactly the same now as I did when I was 23.
"Then you must have been very overweight at 23, dear."
"Well, it's better than being a beanpole."
"You definitely look fatter."
"Evadne, it might interest you to know, dear, that I can still get into my coming-out dress."
"Not without half of you coming out of it, I don't."
"Why can't you go and find something to do? Go and whitewash the coal cellar or something. And leave me to get on with my book. I've just got to a lovely part. She's standing on the balcony in the moonlight, and there's this man who's not a surgeon, but who's just done a heart transplant because no one else was available. And he's just discovered that she's not really a ward orderly at all, but an anaesthetist who's taken the blame for someone else's mistake and is starting all over again from the bottom.
A very funny hospital.
It's a romantic novel now.
Sounds like a load of tripe to me.
Well, it's certainly more fun than clearing out the garage.
All right, then let's have a look at it.
No. If you want to read, get your own book.
I don't feel like reading.
Well, I do, but I can see that I'm not going to be allowed to. So I suppose I may as well give up the attempt. Why don't you play something there?
What?
Well, we'll play leapfrog if you like. But I meant on the piano.
And I meant, what shall I play on the piano?
Do you suppose the entire ring cycle would occupy you sufficiently?
Come along, Hilda. You choose something.
Oh, very well. Anything to get you sitting down. Now, what have we got that's nice and jolly? Oh, I know. There's that little song that Grandpa Fifield always used to like so much.
Do we have to have something that he liked?
What would you prefer, dear? Something your grandfather might have liked? Oh, now, there's a whole book of moral songs here. Let me see. There's Work, Boys, Work, and Be Contented. In Gathering Roses, Look Out for the Thorns. Sign the Pledge for Mother's Sake. Or, what about The Drunkard's Lone Child, which begins, My father's a drunkard, my mother is dead. How does that feel?
All right, Hilda, we'll settle for Grandpa Fifield's song. If it's not too vulgar.
Grandpa Fifield was never vulgar, Ebony. Though he was certainly nothing like as stuffy as your Grandpa McWhirter sounds. Here we are, dear. This is the one. Sporting Gels.
Yes, I imagine it'd be something like that.
It is not in the least bit vulgar there, but like Grandpa Fifield himself, bless his old silk hat and spats, it is just the teeniest, weeniest bit rakish. Well, if you play it there, you'll find out, won't you?
Very well, then. Here goes.
By the style of our dress, you can easily guess
that we are. Yes,
yes, we are.
In fact, from the public in general, confess that we are.
Yes, we are. The up-to-date sporting young girls of the town.
At tennis and cricket, we gain quite renown.
At horse racing, too, we've spent many a crown.
For we are.
Yes, we are. Fond of sporting,
a jolly sight better than courting.
We don't mix about national millionaires. When we hear about the people shout, there's the year without a doubt. Look, 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 jolly good sporting girl. We can't always win, still we don't care a drop.
Oh, we are.
Yes, we are.
The only two ladies that uses my lock as we are.
Yes, we are. At night times we visit the famed music halls.
With seats that we sit in, you bet, are the souls.
And we get every act two or three curtain calls.
For we are.
Yes, we are. Fond of haunting, sporting.
A jolly sight better than courting.
We don't mix about matching the millionaires. When we're out, the people shout, there they go without a doubt. Look, 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 jolly good sporting girls. If winter we go to gay Monte Carlo.
For we are.
Yes, we are.
They're fond of the tables where life isn't slow.
For we are. Yes, we are. We stroll through the boulevard without any head.
We are recognized there to be in the front rank.
We break all their hearts.
And they break the bank.
For we are.
Yes, we are.
From the sporting.
A jolly sight better than courting.
We don't mix the bump. Dashing the millionaires. When we're out, the people shout. There they go. Without a doubt. Look, look, look. Jolly good sporting girls.
Jolly good sporting girls.
takes me back a few years. It was another world, wasn't it?
Yes, but here comes Maud to drag you back into this one.
Excuse me, Dame Elder.
Yes, Maud.
Might I have a little word with you before I just upstairs?
Certainly, dear. What is it?
You know you was going to have apple pie for lunch.
Yes, dear.
Well, how would apple crumble suit?
Crumble?
Well, sort of crumble.
What did you do, Maud? Sweep the pie up off the floor and shove it straight in the oven?
No, I did not, Doctor. I've tinkered with it. And I know what you're thinking, but that floor were clean as a new pin. I just carbolicked it. And the apples ain't tainted, because I tasted them.
Sounds better and better.
Such a shame I shan't be able to try it.
And what, might I ask, is going to prevent you?
Oh, if that news you so rightly pointed out, I do need to lose a little weight. There. Oh, now, whoever can that be?
I'll go, Dame Elder, and then I'll get on with me work.
Thank you, Maud. Evadne, go to the window and see if you can see who it is, dear.
Very well.
We might want to hide.
It looks like Peter Moore's car out there.
Oh, good heavens. Then with the cobble kitchen and the cartwheels on the wall. Is she with him?
I can't see her.
Good. Then whatever it is he's come for, it'll only take half the time.
He's fetching something out of the back of his car.
It's not her, is it?
Well, it's something longish. Obviously awkward to handle. And it's covered in a sort of folk weave blanket.
That sounds like her.
Whatever it is, he's bringing it in.
Well, heaven alone knows what they'll make of it. But show it to him by all means. Well, come along in, then they're in here.
Oh, thank you. Good morning, ladies.
Ah, Mr. Moore, good morning.
Good morning.
Come in, dear.
I say, Mrs. Printbiss, will you take me tit for off for me, will you? I'm dating to have a spare hand.
Is that what they calls a deer stalker at?
No. Just a perfectly ordinary black country ratting cap. Father Christmas brought it last year.
Well, what you want me to do with it? Hang it on the hall stand or bung it in a cage?
Hang it on the hall stand, eh?
And do please keep it out of the kitchen, Maud. I'd hate to come across it in the apple crumble.
Mr. Moore, is your wife with you?
No, not this morning, Dame Hilda.
Oh, what a shame. Isn't that a shame, Evadne?
Isn't it a shame, Hilda?
No, Tuesday's her goat morning.
Her what, dear?
Well, we thought we might keep a few goats, so she's joined a goat club. She goes every Tuesday. Last week she did milking, this week it's cheese making. And I'm hoping that next week it'll be how to make waistcoats and trousers.
Goatskin trousers, Mr. Moore?
Only for weekends, of course. I say, you don't think that would be too much, do you?
I don't see why it should. They look all right on goats.
So what brings you here this morning, Mr. Moore?
Ah, yes. Well, this does. Mind if I put it down?
Oh, do, dear, do. I... is it?
Well, I'll show you. I had to tie this old poncho of Dee's round it to keep it dry. It's absolutely bucketing down at home.
It's bucketing down here as well.
Ah, there. Now, have a look at that. What do you think of that?
Well, it's a bicycle, isn't it? Without wheels. What did you bring it here for, dear? Do you want Evadne to bury it where she buried her old one?
It's an exercise bicycle, Hilda.
Well done, Doctor. But do either of you notice anything strange about it?
It hasn't got a bell.
What do you want a bell for, an exercise bicycle?
To tinkle it at, Ned. When one felt in need of refreshment.
I say, that's not a bad idea. I knew it was a bright idea of mine to bring this up here.
Well, I'm glad you're pleased with yourself, Mr. Moore. Perhaps you'll tell us what this is all about.
Oh, I'm sorry, Doctor. You're right, of course. You see, I'm in market research, and my firm has been asked to test the water for what is undoubtedly a revolutionary type of exercise bicycle. Look, it may not have a bell or a basket as yet, Dame Hilda, but it has two saddles, two sets of handlebars, and four pedals. What does that suggest?
It was designed by an idiot.
It's an exercise tandem.
Oh, God.
You see, it's been suggested that whereas cycling is normally a jolly and social affair, exercise cycling is a sad and solitary one. As soon as you start pedalling, everyone leaves the room.
I can't say I blame them.
Hence the loneliness of the long-distance pedler.
Hence the tandem. Now you can peddle together. Husband with wife, brother with sister, uncle with aunt, boyfriend with girlfriend, and so on and so forth. In fact, if the tandem model is successful, the company is thinking of launching a four-seater family version. Individually painted to match the decor of your own rumpus room.
If the idea is successful, Mr. Maud, it would appear from the design that the people are going to be seeing an awful lot of each other's backs.
I say, that's a sharp remark, Yvette. You're getting some good stuff from us, aren't you, Mr. Moore?
Well, to tell the truth, we're a jump ahead of the doctor on that one. Just a few simple tweaks with the box spanner provided, and there we go. Voila! You can sit facing each other, side by side, or even back to back.
That sounds rather antisocial.
Well, presumably, Evadne, that's for people who hate the sight of each other.
Just so. After all, they need exercise as much as anyone else.
And where do we come into this, Mr. Moore?
Well, what I was hoping was that you might agree to my leaving this prototype with you so that you can give it a whirl in your own time, and then let me have your comments. You see, we're eventually planning a famous pairs advertising campaign, Fame and Fitness in Tandem, featuring well-known duos who regularly use the bike. Maggie Thatcher and Dennis. Rod Hull and Emu. And, of course, your good selves, I hope. There'll be a fee, of course, and the bike will be yours.
Just what I've always wanted.
Good. Well, I'll take up no more of your time now, but I'll give you a tinkle in a couple of days just to see how you're getting on. That'll be okie-dokie, will it?
That'll be perfectly okie-dokie, Mr. Moore.
It couldn't be okie-dokie, dear.
Well, I'll be making tracks then. It's all right. I know where the door is. Ciao.
Goodbye.
Arrivederci, Mr. Moore. Where on earth are we going to put that darn thingy, Evadne?
Well, how about under the window? And then we can have the window open and get a nice breath of fresh air while we're cycling.
What do you mean, while we're cycling? You're not getting me on that.
Why ever not? You admitted you needed to lose a little weight.
I did not. When did I say that?
You admitted it to me in front of Maud.
Oh, Evadne, what I tell you in front of Maud is usually meant for Maud's ears and has nothing whatever to do with you.
Oh, have it your own way, Hilda. Come on, let's just try the bike.
No. Suppose somebody were to walk past that window and see us. I mean, what would they think? We'd look like a couple of witches on a broomstick. Well, you would.
If you never had the slightest intention of even trying it, dear, you should have told Mr. Moore so at the start.
Why?
Because you're not being fair to him. In a couple of days' time, he's going to want to know what we think of it, isn't he?
And when he does, I shall certainly tell him.
What will you tell him?
I shall tell him that I think it's absolutely marvellous.
Which will be a lie.
What does it matter? It'll make him happy. And probably rich. It will also give a lot of pleasure to a lot of fat fools. So where's the harm?
Honestly, Hilda, I sometimes wonder about you.
I bet it's not half as often as I wonder about you. Why don't you try it?
All right, I will.
Die, Mildred.
No, I won't.
Yes, Maud, what is it?
If there's nothing else you want me for, I'll be getting off home.
No, I don't think there's anything else, dear. Unless you fancy a spin on our new tandem there with the doctor.
No, I don't.
I don't blame you.
How do you get your exercise then, Maud? Tossing the caber.
I get most of it clearing up after you, Doctor.
Well, you asked for that, Evadne, and then say you didn't.
But you know, Dame Mildred, I can't look at a tandem without coming over all funny.
Trust you to blame it on a bike.
All right, Evadne, that'll do. You've got your own back. But what exactly have you got against tandems, Maud?
My Arthur and me used to have one when we was first married, Dame Mildred. That's how they lost the tool house at the bottom of the hill.
Say, you must have been going at a bit of a lick.
Oh, it weren't like that.
No, I bet it wasn't. It'd be far too simple.
It was Saturday, d'ye say. Well, we get stopped at them lights at the top of the town. And where we stopped, I spots this cake shop window, and I hops off to have a look in. Now, whether it were the Cremorne's or the Devonshire splits, I don't know. But some had held my attention, and I never see them lights change to green, nor my Arthur peddling off without me.
Do you mean to tell me that he didn't notice that you weren't on the back? Well, if he did, he didn't show it.
But surely when he discovered you weren't there, he came back for you, dear.
Why should he have done?
Oh, shut up, Evelyn. This is a very sad story. How would you like to be left in the lurch? No, I'm sorry I asked that.
Oh, he came back all right, Dame Mildred, but not till it were too late. I were well on me way with the fishmonger by then.
Perhaps we'd better not go into this too deeply, dear.
He picked me up, to say.
Yes. Yes, that's what Hilda meant, I think.
To give me a lift, like. See, Ed and Aunt has lived in Stockton that liked fish, and hadn't had a bit for some time. He offers to run me home.
I bet Arthur was surprised when you arrived home with a fishmonger, wasn't he?
I didn't arrive home with a fishmonger, Dame Mildred. I arrived home with a special constable, and the man as runs the dodgems.
I'm sorry, did I not offer? I seem to have missed something.
Say, we gets to top of Wendelbury Hill, and old Fishy Cudlip stops to answer a call of nature. While I goes to look out the back window to make sure I couldn't see him, my bottom, it's the handbrake, and I were off, down the hill, and gathering speed. And that's when I sees the traction engine.
What traction engine?
The traction engine as were coming up the hill towards me, pulling the helter-skelter to the Mayfair on the common. And right behind it, another with the dodgems and all them caravans. Well, I just closes me eyes and prays. And when I comes to, the toll house were gone. The helter-skelter were tipped out on the rubble. The dodgems was in the ditch. The caravans was all over the place. And I were in a haystack with a tattooed lady.
What was she doing? Reading your palm?
She were helping me out, Doctor. Oh, she were a proper lady. Despite some of the things she'd got drawed on her. And you know, when I gets home, all my Arthur says to me is, that's the last time I'm ever taking you out for a pedal.
Well, there you are then, Maud. That machine over there is perfect for you and Arthur. No matter what happens, you can never be separated. So Maud went home, and shortly after lunch, Evadne popped down to the village to post a letter. While I was on my own, I decided to try the bank. It won't be a stylish marriage. We can't afford a carriage. But I'll look sweet upon the seat of a bicycle. Hello!
It's me, Dame Hilda, Peter Moore.
I'm in the drawing room, dear. Be an angel and come round to the garden window, would you? It is open.
Righty-ho, coming round.
There. Ah, Mr. Moore, there you are. Well, come along in.
Thank you. Yes. Ah. Oh, I'm sorry to disturb you, Dame Hilda, but I left my hat here this morning and I... Oh, you're on the bike already, are you? Gordo. Any comments so far?
Just one, dear.
What's that?
How in heaven's name does one get off this thing?
I say you're not stuck, are you?
Oh, no, no, of course not. It's just that I can't seem to get off it. My feet don't touch the floor, dear, and I'm terrified of tipping it.
Ah, the saddle's just a touch too high for you.
I knew there'd be a perfectly simple explanation.
I'll soon fix that. If you'll just hop off for a minute.
Yes, of course, that's the trouble, dear, you see, the hopping off.
I tell you what. I'll grab hold of the handlebars to steady her. That's it. Now, you put that arm round my shoulders and very gently wheelie... Very gently!
Oh!
Well, that's fine, Dame Hilda, if you feel safer with both arms tight round my neck.
Sorry!
That's better.
Now, push me upright again, would you? Or can't you do that while you're doing the splits?
Ah. I seem to have got myself stuck, I'm afraid. Dee always said these trousers were too tight.
I'm slipping.
Oh, dear, hang on, will you?
Hilda, what on earth is going on?
Oh, Evadne, I never thought I'd be so glad to see you, dear. Do something, would you? Do something, dear.
And what would you like me to do?
jump on your shoulders and complete the pyramid.
Poor Mr. Moore's got himself stuck.
Yes, I tell you what. Just push my right leg a little closer to my left and gently lever me into an upright position, will you?
Very well.
Thank you.
Right. Hello.
Careful.
Oh. Gently, Rodney. Oh. Gently. Oh, oh, Phil. It's tipping the other way.
Oh, quick, Doctor. Round the other side. Catch her quickly.
Pull me, Mr. Moore. Pull me.
Right,
pull me now.
Don't make such a fuss, Hilda. You think you're on a unicycle. There. That's steady enough.
If you could just let go of my neck once more, Damien.
Oh, I'm sorry, dear.
Ah.
Thank you. Well, I must say this little incident has proved one thing, hasn't it, Evadne?
And what's that, then?
Well, that with one of these things you can have fun and get a lot of exercise. I bet there's not a single muscle I haven't used.
That was Fit for Anything, a further extract from the random jottings of Hinge and Brackett, written by Gerald Frau. To assist Dr. Evadne Hinge and Dame Hilda Brackett, we welcome Jean Haywood as Maud. Our thanks also to this week's guest, Chris Emmett, and to the members of the Stacton Trestle Music Appreciation Society for their contribution. Production was by John Dias.